Planned Maryland. It's an executive order by Governor Martin O'Malley to limit growth and preserve land. But on the Eastern Shore, it has drawn sharp criticism, including the charge that it potentially limits local government control of their planning for communities. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Over the next 20 years, a million more people are expected to be added to the state, with over 400,000 households and 600,000 new jobs. So how do local communities and the state handle this upsurge in growth, and especially in regions like the Eastern Shore, where at least one critic has called Planned Maryland a war on rural areas? Our guest by phone, Richard Hall. He's the Maryland Secretary for Planning. And also in studio, our guest is Wicomico County Councilmember Gail Barkovich. Thanks for both of you coming in.
Thank you.
Well, Richard, thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, I want to first of all turn to you, Richard. Why don't you outline a little for us about the goals of this plan and what local governments are expected to do as a result of them?
Sure. Well, the plan is a playbook, a game plan, a strategy for existing state programs. And that's at the core of it, what it is, nothing more, nothing less. So the goals are consistent with goals, the visions the state has had in place for a long time. In 1992, the Maryland General Assembly passed eight visions, and they were very common sense type planning goals that, direct growth to infrastructure, have mixed use development, again, very fundamental planning type goals. And then to preserve rural areas and, make the best use of existing resources, existing infrastructure, things that most local government plans say on their own, and very common sense sort of planning type goals. The General Assembly updated those in 2009. So that's sort of the core of what the plan does, what its goals are. And like I said before, what the plan seeks to do is to coordinate existing state programs across a number of state agencies, because we've had a lot of smart growth programs in place for decades across state government, and there's never been a strategy document, a policy document to knit them together. So the plan is not seeking to limit growth, it's seeking to direct growth, which is what we've been trying to do in Maryland for a long time in partnership with a lot of stakeholders, including local governments.
So how does the plan then impact local governments in terms of how they determine how to deal with their particular growth issues as opposed to the state? Because obviously there's, as I indicated earlier just a moment ago, there is some concern that local governments will get preempted.
Right. It doesn't change that relationship at all. The state and local governments have worked together, and at times, no doubt, there's been dust-ups, and that's way before there was Plan Maryland. But generally, state and local governments have worked together mostly well on these matters for decades. And again, there's been programs that address smart growth directly and indirectly across a number of state agencies for decades. So I think that once it gets on the ground running and people get used to it, it'll be a good communication tool and coordination tool across state agencies and with local governments, because we want to recognize what their plans and programs are and have our plan to be very reflective of what their planning priorities are that they already have in their comprehensive plan.
Well, I want to turn now to Wicomico County Councilmember Gail Barkovich. So, Gail, what is your reaction to what you've seen from this plan so far?
Well, I think one of the concerns for a number of counties in Maryland is that Annapolis really will be telling us how to grow and where to grow. And basically, some of this plan seems to indicate that if you read the executive order, the state is going to be preparing planning area guidelines to establish criteria for identifying appropriate locations for planning areas that state agencies will use to direct their resources, in other words, their funds. And a very good way for Annapolis to be able to control growth, of course, in Maryland, is by monies. And it appears that they want to achieve most of the new growth in priority funding areas. And one of the things about a priority funding area is that wastewater and sewer office, public, community, municipal, whatever, be available. And so that kind of leaves some of these rural counties out because, for instance, in Wicomico County, our county does not have water and sewer. It's all within the municipalities.
What about that, Richard?
Well, specific on the water and sewer part, only back up to the bigger issue first. You know, we're not going to direct where the county can grow, can't grow. The plan cannot do that because the plan is a policy plan. It's not a law. It's not regulations. In 1997, the Priority Funding Area Act was created, and that established a lot of what we're doing with Plan Maryland anyway. So it's been in place for 15 years, and the Priority Funding Areas, also known as Smart Growth Areas, is where state dollars ought to be directed, and it's areas that local governments have provided infrastructure, including central sewer, another more intense development versus the countryside. And again, this is just straight up common sense planning type thing here. As far as the water and sewer in Wicomico County, you know, Salisbury is a sizable city, especially on the Eastern Shore, and it is a large plant. It's not the only wastewater treatment plant in the county by any means, but it's the biggest. And there's a lot of room to grow within the area served by that wastewater treatment plant. We're not saying that people can't grow outside of there by any means, and but the idea is generally, and this is not unique to Wicomico County, including Salisbury, because Salisbury is part of Wicomico County, of course, but to, you know, direct as much growth as possible on the existing infrastructure served by central sewer in communities and neighborhoods, you know, and as opposed to trying to limit how much grows on our viable and valuable farmland and forests, you know, on large lots. That's part of the game plan, is to try to make that happen as much as possible.
Well, I was going to say another thing, too, is when I talk to realtors around this area, many times they're telling me that individuals moving here don't want to be located in a municipality. They're coming here to have some open space and grass under their feet, and that they prefer to live out in the county, out in the more rural areas. Another piece of this is I know that you want to it's mentioned in the plan about doubling transit ridership by 2020. That's another piece in the rural counties that many times that public transportation is not available. We do have short transit, but short transit has very limited routes for people to ride on. And most people that I've talked to, you know, want to drive their own vehicles coming and going. I do. Gives me my freedom to come and go as I please and, you know, go where I want, when I want. And so that's another piece of this that I see popping up in here, too, that you want to push people into municipalities so that they use mass transit.
How about the issue of well, let's first one of the pieces, this idea that smart growth people have said for years that they would like to see development around the urban areas where there is water and sewer, which makes certainly a lot of sense. On the other hand, as Gail mentioned a moment ago, there are a lot of people who say don't want to live next to Salisbury. They might want to live out in Pittsville. They might want to live out in other smaller communities which don't necessarily have this. Or there may even be some cluster communities. I know we've had a debate here in Wicomico County about cluster development. What about that idea of if you want to attract people here, some of them, they're not just not going to want to live in Salisbury or next to Salisbury.
Sure. You know, we're not pushing people anywhere. You know, the broad public policy is to direct as much growth as possible to the existing town's growth centers. Again, whether it's, you know, Salisbury or Fruitland or what have you. We recognize that people do and will want to live out in the more rural areas. You know, we see the impacts of that. We recognize that's still going to happen. You know, the plan by no means prevents that. I keep coming back to the plan is nothing more, nothing less than a policy plan. It really can't force anyone or any county to do anything. But we're trying to knit together our existing state programs is what it's really about.
Well, except that, again, I'm going to go back to the issue of, you know, funding. It seems to indicate in this policy plan of yours that the majority of funding or the preference or the priority to funding is to go to PFAs.
Which are
priority funding areas. And most of the priority funding areas, again, will be where there is water and sewer. So in some respects, you know, you may not be saying that the counties can't do what they want to do, but you're going to control it by monies.
Let's just jump in here just a moment, because one of the things that particularly smart growth folks have said, in essence, is that it makes more sense to if you're going to have development, to have it near places that have water and sewer. And the primary reason is because it is better for the environment. If you, for instance, we have already, certainly on the Eastern Shore, but elsewhere in Maryland, we have problems with septic systems. And some of the pollution has been...
We have problems with wastewater treatment plants,
well,
too.
Well, that's true, too. Maybe we'll get that fixed.
One big one here.
but there is this argument that's made is that, well, it would be nice if people could live out in smaller areas, but really, if you want to have real serious growth, which we certainly expect on the Eastern Shore, that it really is better to have it near the urban areas where you can hook into, say, water. And so what about that argument? I mean, isn't it better to have it near those kinds of facilities rather than trying to figure out whether or not a septic system works and doesn't work, or depending upon the, you know, say, a septic system or a treatment system for clusters? I mean, what about that idea?
Well, if I had water and sewer available to me where I live, and it would probably have to come out of Fruitland because that's the closest, I would be very happy to be on water and sewer. One of the things, my first experiences when I moved here, which was quite a surprise, was when we had thunderstorms and no power, I had no water. And that was with young children. That was quite a surprise to me. But anyway, going back to that, there with the changes in technology coming up, and I know for instance, the critical areas, if you now put in a septic system or have to redo your septic system, you are required to do some sort of new technology to reduce the nitrogen and phosphorus. So there's always that coming up, too. And those that technology and that capability will be changing even for the wastewater treatment plants to make them more efficient, to make them better.
What about that, Richard? The idea that and I know we'll get to a moment to the cluster developments, but what about this idea that the technology has come a long ways and we can have these kinds of developments, as it were, without necessarily harming the environment?
Well, a couple things. One, the situation with Salisbury Wastewater Treatment Plant is fairly unique. I know. That people were trying to do the right thing and get upgrading the plant, and that's been an issue for a while. I know good people are working very hard to fix that, and that will be fixed at some point. And Gail probably knows more about that than I do at the moment, but I know that the Department of Environment is working with the county and the city and others to fix that plant. But in Maryland, which is a relatively small and very diverse state, most of the state's major wastewater treatment plants are or are planned for some of the highest level of treatment for a wastewater treatment plant in the nation. Today, except for in the critical area, we're putting in septic systems that were never designed to remove the bay and our local streams and the Wicomico River's main pollutant, which is nitrogen. Septic systems were never designed to remove those, except for the ones now required in critical area. Now, you all mentioned a minute ago about the technology. So technology is out there to make the septic systems better performing, but even the best septic systems that are out there today still only remove half of the pollutants that our advanced wastewater treatment plants do. So pulling all this together and looking in the long run, it makes more sense to get as much of the county's growth at the county scale we're talking about on an advanced wastewater treatment plant, which it will be at some point, because those can be upgraded. Once individual septic systems are on someone's private property in their backyard, the state wants to try to do it, but it's hard to upgrade those systems once they're there. It's expensive. And we start looking at this, on a per capita basis, it's very expensive. So, again, in the long run, in the big picture, it's better to try to direct as much of our growth as possible. We know there's going to be septic system growth. There's no doubt about that, and that's going to happen. but as much as possible, trying to get the growth to go to the central wastewater treatment plant as a better game plan. And again, these things aren't new to Plant Maryland. This was part of what the 97 priority funding area law was going after, the 1992 Planning Act, and many other efforts before that.
Let me raise an issue here, because one of the objects of this plan, as you say, is to try to preserve as much forest land, but also as much agricultural land as possible. And I know,
right.
I know some environmentalists have suggested that we are losing way too much farmland to development. Some of it happens, so a farmer may at the end of his lifetime decide that he wants to sell it off or sell part of his land off because that's part of his retirement. What about this idea of preserving agricultural land? I'll maybe turn to you first, Gail, because that is a concern. On the one hand, there's property rights and so on. On the other hand, we want to try to preserve as much agricultural land as possible. What about that issue?
Well, I think one of the we have here in Wicomico County, we have had some very good success with putting land aside in preservation programs. On the west side in particular, we have a very Quantico Creek area, I think it is. We have a rural legacy program out there that's been very active. The other thing, too, going back to, I think one of the reasons we offer this cluster development for neighborhoods or communities or whatever you want to say, growth out in the more rural areas of the county, is because there is a requirement to do a set-aside on that, at least 50%. So that, in many cases, I think we're finding that, more of that is put aside. But there are, you're going back to this too, some of this, you are absolutely right. There are times, whether a farmer wants to or not, to be able to continue farming, not only just for their retirement, they find that they do have to sell land off for development. And, it may not be their first choice. And that's something that we have to be very careful of, that we don't take away that ability for them to do that, because they need that money sometimes, as to say, just to even continue in the current operation they're in, not let alone their retirement. So that goes on with along the line of property rights. And the other piece is, if somebody owns a piece of property, and my husband is a perfect example of this, he thinks he should be able to do what he wants with his property and not have government, particularly government from Annapolis, telling us what to do here in Wicomico County.
Well, what about that, Richard? And the idea that, for instance, cluster developments, which obviously have their own individual treatment plants, not necessarily as large as certainly a city like Salisbury, are those acceptable? Do you think under a Planned Maryland vision that there might be those kinds of cluster developments? Because I know we've had a very vigorous debate here, certainly about having those.
Well, on the cluster part, it kind of depends on what scale, order of magnitude you're talking about. But to the broader point about farmland preservation, even just take the environment out of it for a moment, if you will. But just from a business perspective and jobs, and especially in a place like Wicomico County, we need to hang on to as much farmland as possible. And we're not doing anything state level that would prevent a farmer from carving off a few lots for his or her children. But then we need to hang up on to as much farmland as possible for the poultry industry, if nothing else, for the chicken houses, the ability to spread manure, the ability to grow as much of the feed as possible so that less of it needs to be imported from outside of the county, outside of the state, outside of the region, to feed the birds. So, that's something to think about regardless of the environment. Of course, the environment's important too. And the other point I'll make is, I was born and raised in Wicomico County. I'm very familiar with the rural legacy area. There's some of the most beautiful lands and water resources in the state over there. So I'm very happy that Gail and others are working on that rural legacy priority preservation area over there. Actually, part of the county near there where I grew up. The cluster business, I think all of us are most of the time trying to work together to figure out a way to, what's the smartest way to, if a farmer wants to develop a little bit of land, to do that and the smartest way possible. And so sometimes maybe that is a cluster subdivision with what people commonly call a package plant associated with it. So essentially a big septic system or something else, a community septic system. There's a lot of terms for them. They can be, you have to be very careful with those. Maintenance with those is something to be careful with. A lot of times counties are worried about them and the long-term maintenance of them. So there's a lot of issues with them, but I think, you know, it's important on something as vital as you know, maintaining farmland and, you know, trying to recognize property rights there is, you know, don't rule out any options and see what makes sense in the situation at hand.
Let me just say, in terms of property rights, because I ran across an environmentalist, I think it's David Wilson, I think, he's with Coastal Bays Program, and I ran across a quote. He says, a laissez-faire approach to planning is the real assault on personal freedom since it gives citizens little control of water quality that supports local economies, the tax rate they pay, or the wildlife populations that they hold in trust, end quote. I want to turn to Gail, because some folks will look at property rights and say, well, yes, there are certain things about property rights. On the other hand, we all have to live together, and there has to be some limits here. What do you see as the limits for property rights when it comes to developments and whether you can and can't and what people can do with their property?
Well, I think when anybody buys a piece of property or owns a piece of property, you know, there are current laws in place when they have that property. You know, how much acreage you need to, you know, build a home on, how much acreage the health department requires for your septic system. Those are some of the health and safety regulations that are, you know, already in place. What I'm talking about, I think, you know, property rights, I'm talking about, for instance, if my husband, we've added several garages out in the back because he collects cars. So he has had the right so far to be able to do that. And that's something that, you know, he would like to be able to continue to do. The rights are also have to do with the value of your land. You know, you don't want somebody coming in and passing laws that are going to decrease the value of your land. And again, going back to farming, you know, when a farmer needs to borrow money from the bank, that land is their collateral to the bank. And so if you change some of the rights or change the zoning or the restrictions on land, many times you also impact on the value of a person's land. And that's one of the property rights that I think is very important that we need to preserve today's society and farm and agriculture in Wicomico County. And I thought it was interesting that Richard said something about, Mr. Hall, Secretary Hall said something about spreading manure on farmlands. I always thought that manure contained a lot of nitrogen, so I was surprised to hear him say that. I think one of the issues right now over Worcester County is a lawsuit over potential manure that in one of the farms.
Well, I should say, by the way, the Governor O'Malley, by the way, opposes that the lawsuit. But let me wrap up this one final thing, because there is something, speaking to the governor, in terms of implementation enforcement. The governor made reference to that the state did not want to subsidize, quote, stupid decisions, or rather unsustainable decisions. And I want to turn to you, Richard. What does that mean? Because on the one hand, you say there are guidelines and it certainly will be legislation. On the other hand, you can withhold funding and enforce decisions on the local counties that way.
Well, yes, but that's been the case for decades. You know, I think the plan will help the communicate where and when and how that's more versus less likely to happen. That the point you're making about funding and where it goes and where it doesn't is the core of the 1997 Priority Funding Area Act, you know, it's been well documented, and I'm sure someone will pick out an exception here or there, but it's been well documented in Maryland and otherwise, even nationally, as far back at least as the 70s, that, you know, on average, a home spread out across the landscape versus in a compact community costs a lot more ultimately to service, whether it's roads, other infrastructure, public services, driving those kids to school, the whole nine yards. And so that's a lot of the thrust behind the 1997 law, which is to recognize that and say, look, for the state dollars that come from Maryland citizens, we need to spend them as wisely as possible. And the law and other related policies recognize that there are rural developments that recognize exceptions and all of that. But, you know, Maryland is the fifth most densely populated state in the nation. It's very diverse, but it is densely populated. We are a growing state. Nowhere's growing a whole lot right now, but the state is projected to grow by 1 million new Marylanders, I think, as you mentioned in your opening. And we have to grow smart, whether that's in Salisbury or Hebron or Pittsville, what have you. And, you know, we think generally, you know, the state has a good track record of working with local governments on this very tough and complicated issue. Things flare up from time to time. But, you know, getting back to the issue at hand, you know, all we're trying to do with Plan Maryland is to better coordinate existing state programs. Some are out there saying it's going to do a lot more, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. You have to be able to show me where it has done any of that damage. But, you know, we see it as a great tool to make us work smarter, work better with a number of stakeholders, including local governments.
Gail, I want to turn to you because one of the critics has called this a war on the rural areas. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Well, I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens. But in some sense, yes, I kind of agree with that because, you know, what Wicomico County is certainly a lot different from, let's say, Baltimore County, where, you know, where BRAC is going in, and what is available there. And as far as even, I'm going to say, businesses and you know, jobs and opportunities. And so, yes, the rural areas, I think, are one of the reasons I like living here is because it's rural. But, I mean, we are not like Baltimore County. We're not like PG County. We're not like Montgomery County. And so there are some concerns, and I have some concerns, too, that these planning guidelines that the state is going to put forth, they can't be one, you know, they can't be
one size.
One size fits all. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. They can't be one size fits all, and that's one of the concerns. And again, the concern is, you know, since there are going to be planning guidelines coming out of Annapolis for the counties and municipalities, you know, it's like Annapolis is going to be telling us, you know, what we should be doing and not doing. And that's one of the concerns.
You don't trust the state government to work with the local governments so that each county will have its own plan and deal with particular problems or particular peculiarities. I guess it is, of the counties themselves.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, right now, when we do our comprehensive plan or we do our priority preservation area plan that we're working on, that does go to the state. And there are a number of agencies at the state that review those plans. They call it making comments. I call it approving or not approving. And so, yeah, there is a concern that, you know, this one size will not fit all, and I don't know how this is going to work, and that's one of the concerns. It is very general in kind of its wording, you know, we will see if legislation even comes forward that has some effect because of this executive order.
Now, Richard, in fact, I was in Annapolis a few weeks ago, and both the Speaker of the House of Delegates and the President of the Senate both, when asked about this, said that, well, they would hold some public hearings. They took a look at some legislation in relationship to this this proposal, this plan. What do you hear back in Annapolis about where this might go? Because I can see that there are probably a number, particularly in the rural areas, a number of folks who might object to this, who might want to trim it down, and could very well cross both, certainly party lines, both Democrats and Republicans. What are you hearing on your end up there in Annapolis?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of things. I briefed the House of Delegates Environmental Matters Committee this morning about the plan. And, you know, I think that the best way to illustrate the situation here, and I can appreciate that with people like Gail, you know, that want to do the right thing, I think. You know, we've never had a plan like this before. And so, you know, until you get into looking at it in detail and seeing how we're going to implement it, it's the fear of the unknown. And I think that's the biggest driver. There was a 3.5-hour or longer briefing on the plan in the Senate in November, this past November, 3.5 hours or longer. I'm being generous when I say that 15 minutes out of 3.5 hours did anyone talk about anything specifically that the plan said. It was more about what it might do, what it could do, all these other sort of broader kind of issues that are perennially out there, relationship between the state and local governments. I mean, these are issues we've been talking about for decades. You know, to the extent that the plan is a war in rural Maryland, I mean, that makes nice headlines and stuff. You know, I'll tell you what a war in rural Maryland is littering our landscape with a lot of two-acre lots. We know that's going to happen, but to sort of have that be the predominant land use pattern to threaten our agribusiness, to threaten our local streams and rivers and the bay, that's a war in rural Maryland.
Okay.
Not what we're trying to do.
Okay, and Richard, I'm going to have to cut you off there. We're at the end of our half hour. We've been talking to Richard Hall. He's the Maryland Secretary of Planning. Also in studio, Wacomico County Councilmember Gail Pargovich, who's been talking about Plan Maryland, an attempt by certainly the governor and the state to coordinate development. And as we can hear just within the last half hour, certainly a good deal of discussion about just exactly what that might mean for Wacomico County and the counties in general. I'm Don Rush. You've been listening to Delmarva Today, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC-14.org.